everyone. I'm Porva.
And I'm Nishina.
And this is Unsilent Women. Join us as we take on topics of gender, feminism, heritage, and being brown women in white spaces. Nothing is off the table, from tattoos and self-expression to ancestral learning and hustle culture.
With heart, soul, and strong coffee, we share personal stories to have thoughtful and healing conversations that build bridges between women of color everywhere. We are located on various stolen, unceded, and ancestral lands that are sacred to a number of Indigenous peoples.
The Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, colonially known as Vancouver, Canada, and the Chortega peoples of the Guanacaste province of Costa Rica. To learn more about the land you occupy, check out nativeland.ca. Some of the topics in this episode may be triggering to some listeners. You are encouraged to listen at your own comfort level. My dad, he had a funny way of, you know, trying to get me to accept it more. He would say, we'd go out and people would say, where are you from? And he would say, oh, I'm Indian, but my daughter is Swiss. Hi, everyone. Welcome to season two of Unsilent Women. If this is your first time here, thank you for dropping by and lending us your ears. And if you've been with us for a while, welcome back. You are here for the facelift of this show. We've gone through some changes. You may have heard a new voice on our little intro. I have a fabulous co-host, and I am so excited to introduce her to you. Nishina Morani Miranda is a healer and registered counselor working out of beautiful Vancouver, Canada. She brings an integrative, ever-evolving approach to therapy that includes critical thinking and somatic embodiment, considering systems, culture, relationships, and community. She commits to continue her own learning in honor of holding space through a social justice lens and compassionate heart. And I cannot tell you guys how awesome this woman is. Talking to her is just like every conversation we have makes me feel like I'm going through the most amazing, healing, most therapeutic session. Welcome, Nishina. I am so excited to have you.
Hello. That's high to live up to, but I'm gonna try. Likewise, the feeling's mutual. Thank you for having me and inviting me on this journey with you.
Nishina, we've been having so many amazing conversations over the last few months. And, you know, we've shared a lot of stories, both personal and we've gone deep in some of the conversations. But today, I have a story for you. Mm. So it's a juicy one, I promise.
I'm intrigued.
A few months ago, I was at dinner, and it was a pretty mixed group of people. It was a fairly international setting. And I was sitting next to this gentleman who was older, and he asked me where I was from. And I said, you know, I'm Canadian, I'm from Canada, and so was he. And so we chatted a little bit about that. But then he went a little further to ask me, you know, where are you really from? So I was like, okay, you're a stranger, you want to know my life story, sure, I'll give you kind of the spiel of the fact that I moved around a lot and I didn't move to Canada till I was 19 years old. And after he heard my story, he turns to my husband and he asks him, and are you a real Canadian? Which was, which just took me by surprise and caught me so off guard, because I realized that in 2022, there are still so many people that will question your identity. And it brought up a lot of, I don't want to say like past traumas, but it brought up a lot of justifications for some of the ways that I feel like I've carried myself through the world these past three decades. Mm-hmm. And I realized that when I try to be white passing, and the fact that I have assimilated as a Canadian and as a North American, it is for these reasons. It's because you are always on the back foot a little bit, waiting for somebody to point out that you're true identity may not be how you identify, right? And when that happened, I thought, you know what? We need to talk a little bit about reclaiming identity, and that's got to be our episode. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah, this is our complex conversation for the day. It's so nuanced, and I can't help but wonder if our listeners are feeling or were feeling the same thing in terms of like such a visceral reaction to that, right? And sort of the questioning of who you are. And so if I was able to see a show of hands, I would imagine there would be a lot of hands in the air, I would hope, right? And sort of relating to this. And so, yeah, I think as far as this being a really important topic of conversation, we picked a juicy one for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really interesting because at any time, you know, it would be fair to say that most people don't feel comfortable being exactly who they are out in public, right? As much as people say we don't judge, let's be real, we all judge a little bit. And we live in a judgmental world and people are making assumptions about you day in and day out. People come to conclusions with their own biases and, you know, their own thinking sort of colors what they may, how they may feel about you. But I've been thinking a lot lately about identity, and especially for someone like myself and like a lot of my friends who are people with hyphenated identities. They may be American and something else, or Canadian and something else, or frankly, here even Costa Rican and something else. It's interesting because I don't know about you, but I feel like for most of my life, I have moved through the world crafting and creating this almost persona of who I am. And there are parts of me that I have knowingly and willingly silenced for fear of being stereotyped, for fear of being just made to feel small. And I think that there is now, it seems like, a big power in, there's a lot of power and a big movement, a shift towards people sort of embracing their identities more and more. And so I just think it's so beautiful to be able to have kind of open conversations about identity, whatever they may be. You know, this example is one of culture and heritage and race, but there are just so many things that kind of keep us afraid to really step into who we are.
Yeah, I deeply resonate with that. And as I was hearing you sort of share that around hyphenated identities, it is such an important piece of the pie. And then to consider that the pie is still so big, right? Because we're talking about identity, I would imagine, not for everyone, but in the way in which I'm in relationship with continuing to figure that out, because that is, I think, a continual journey. You know, we're talking about like occupation and religion and sex and ethnicity and then personality and characteristics and traits. And these things are, you know, informed from our formative years, right? And so not to say that all roads lead back to childhood. Most of the time, all roads lead back to childhood.
Seems like it, though,
it
right?
It seems like it.
You start scratching the surface and then, here we are again, right back to sixth grade.
Right, yes. And then I was in the bathroom alone. No. But there's something to be investigated and opening up to that curiosity around, okay, well, when did all these things come to be, these ideologies and the belief system that I carry and the way in which I show up as my characteristics and my traits and my patterns, to start to go, wait a second, like, is this really belongs to me? Is this really mine? And and so for me, in hearing your story, it reminds me of, okay, Nishina, like, where did this kind of like really start to rumble for you? And so my story kind of goes like this. This felt a little bit more implicit. So I was 21 years old and found myself pregnant out of wedlock. You know, I was not married, didn't intend to get married. And so automatically already rules had been broken, right? Rules around don't have sex before marriage. Rules around, okay, if you're going to have sex before marriage and you get pregnant, then you're going to have to be married.
Right.
So let's just kind of shotgun this. And so it looks as if this was all planned.
Planned,
exactly. And so none of this panned out the way it needed to be as far as my family went. And so I found myself in a situation to really assess, okay, the Nishina that sort of was living up to this point, who found herself in a position of being pregnant at 21 years old, there's like, how did that even come to be, first of all? So there's that piece. Mm-hmm. And then there's the piece around this version of Nishina is not going to be the version that is going to be able to show up with child.
Right.
And to support and to make a life and to protect and to nurture. And so this is like a very, I don't know what the word is. I can't even describe it, but it felt like, okay, holy shit, girl, you've got 9 months now. Or from when I actually found out and believed it.
Right.
You know, there was maybe about 5 months, right?
Right.
4 months of denial.
A bit of bargaining right there, right?
Sure. Yeah, a little bit of that grief cycle that some of us may know. And so there was 5 months of, you gotta contend with an identity that is going to work for this leg of your journey. What is that going to be? So it really was almost like a forced reckoning that was bestowed on me to sift and make sense of what was I going to take with and what was I going to leave behind and to whom was I going to give back the shit that didn't land. So part of that, you know, in a way as well, when we're thinking about maybe the word reclamation, which can really land differently for so many people. Mm-hmm. And I want to honor that because it can be so expansive and personal, but it simplified, perhaps part of that would be taking back that which you choose to take back and to hold and to honor and to practice. And to piggyback off of what you said, yes, there is power in that.
Yeah.
There's such beautiful, deep power in that.
Oh, wow. that was very deep. I'm gonna sit with that for a moment.
Yeah, that was a ride. It was a ride for sure.
I was talking to a friend of mine lately who is going through a second breakup. She had a divorce and then she, you know, had to deal with that. And it was hard and it was very challenging from a cultural perspective as well. But then now she thought she found someone who was like, this was it. Maybe she found him too quickly. But now she's sort of in a second state of, you know, somebody that she had really given a lot of her time and herself to, and that hasn't panned out. And she said, you know, I'm trying to figure out who I am and figure out my identity. And I thought that's interesting, that word identity, because it feels like we live so many lifetimes in this one life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so being stuck to a single identity, there are some things, of course, in your core that you may carry forever.
Sure.
But, right? And I feel like that is the essence of who you are. And that doesn't even have to be things like gender, because we know gender is a form of expression. It's not something that you have to be anchored to. I don't think it has to be, I guess, cultural necessarily either, because people discover different cultures and discover themselves through different forms of cultural expression. But this idea that you are who you are from the day you're born and that every step of the way you're making decisions that anchor you to a certain identity is it's kind of baffling, because life just doesn't seem to work that way, right? Like, you make a decision when you're 16 years old or 18 years old that you're going to go to college and you're now going to study and become a doctor or a lawyer. You're kind of boxing yourself in, and you don't even know if that's something that's going to work for you for the rest of your life, right? You don't know that that's the career you want. And that's how sort of we've all been raised to think, is that there come these times in your life when you have to decide who you are, and that can never change. And I think that in kind of taking power back, and I gave that example of sort of being questioned about my Canadian identity, because I wasn't Canadian till I was 18 years old. Up until then, I was growing up in Europe, and before that in Asia. And so my identity was this, you know, child that was moving around. It wasn't fixed. I thought I was just like very international. You know, I love to think of myself as some international kid. But it's just interesting, because I came to Canada and I like fell in love with it. And I met my husband here, and I got educated here, and I got my education here, and I have so many friends, and I have so many, you know, like I have family there now. So I consider myself Canadian, but I'm often reminded of the fact that I can't get too comfortable in that identity, and I can't just, you know, assume that no one else will question it.
And right.
That's sort of what's been kind of kicking around in my noggin for a while. And it's interesting, because I kind of want to reclaim both sort of my heritage and my Canadianness, and kind of meld them into one. And
Yeah, I hear you. And I love that, because it sort of reminds me of something that's come up in our previous conversations, right? This kind of theme of like, can it be both? And oftentimes I think around identity, as you mentioned, it's this thing of sort of categorization and labeling and naming, which I think serves its purpose, right? For the context of helping to support our understanding of ourselves. And then can there be more than that? Is there more space and room to bring in the other avenues and aspects of self that are sort of maybe more informed by considering, like, for example, like, what are my values? And then can my values change and morph and evolve as I do? Do those need to be fixed, you know, when I do my sit down New Year's resolution, for example, and my activity of sort of assessment of the year? I think what you're speaking to, in the way I'm hearing it, and perhaps some of our listeners, is like this permission to be flexible and to change and to adapt new ideas around who you are and who you wish to be. And that even being kind of like, I don't know, maybe a source of fun in a way.
Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, it's funny, because at the end of the day, I think that, like, what is real identity and what is constructed identity, right?
Right.
We're all constructing a version of ourselves, whether you just happen to be, by virtue of birth and time and all of those things, somebody that is, I guess, quote unquote, in air quotes, maybe more accepted globally because of skin color and race and gender and all of those things. But you are still constructing your identity, right? Like, there's the work you, and there's the home you, and there's the married or relationship or whatever version of you. And then there's the child to your parents version of you. And I know it's really difficult to, it's great to say be who you want to be and be who you are, but that's really hard to do, right? Nobody really drops their guard completely. Nobody lets their guard down completely.
And it's vague. It feels really vague too.
Yeah, it does, right? Like, when someone says, be who you want to be, that to me just sounds like, I don't know, some real, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow, put a quote on a mug type of shit.
Sure. Yes, put it on a t-shirt. Tell me what that is.
Put it on a t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
Put it on a journal. Slap it on a journal to guide you. But it's, in kind of thinking about some of these things, you have to kind of go deeper, right? If you're really going to question identity and really want to get to the roots of who you are, there is so much to consider. You may not even scratch the surface of it in your whole lifetime. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's okay, right? And there's kind of like, I appreciate you mentioning that, because that sort of allows one to maybe also just take it at their own pace, right? And you know, when I think about kind of when this started opening up with more intention for me, and perhaps even from you and your share, like I'm probably 12 years in, I would say, of being consciously sort of reflective around this. And mm-hmm. I have a great sense of, you know, who I am and how that's informed. And I'm also really comfortable in recognizing that that might be different in 5 years. And so there's like this piece of maybe also being unattached
right.
to that process, right? Which mm-hmm. is kind of a weird push and pull space to be in, right? Like I yeah. really want to deep dive and know, and then can I just like let it hover out there to morph on its own, you know?
Right. Yeah. No, it's interesting because, you know, for example, I've heard a lot of people talk about how they don't like change. And so
who are those people?
It feels maybe it's there's a lot of safety and comfort, right? In being anchored to identity.
Of course.
And you don't want to start opening the Pandora's box because you may not know what you discover. One of the things that kind of came up for me in a lot of this identity and questioning is kind of what are my ancestral learnings, right? Like what are the things I got mm-hmm. from the people who came before me, from my mother and my grandmother and my father? Like what was the wisdom that was passed down? What were maybe some of the traumas that were passed down?
Right.
What were some of the, you know, really problematic behavior patterns or relationship dynamics that I've inherited that I now need to be mindful and conscious of to not repeat in my own
right.
life. And then there's the other part of it that's a little bit more fun, which is what are the things that you love to do and you enjoy and you don't want to hide or be considered weird for enjoying, right? Like there's a lot of people, for example, and I think people of different, maybe some different ethnicities, some of the listeners, you might be able to relate to this. This idea that you can't really enjoy your food, your own cuisine or the cuisine, you know, the dishes that come to you from your culture in sort of more public settings. Like if you're sharing with roommates, you don't want to cook something that other people might find offensive. And so you're embarrassed to eat food that is meaningful for you or be considered strange for some of the quote unquote customs that you practice. And so it's really nuanced.
Yeah, I can resonate to that. Like even, you know, we had a family get together not too long ago and, you know, shout out to Grand Tandoori restaurant here in Burnaby, Vancouver, BC, a really great place to go. But it's interesting how you're saying that because, you know, some folks listening might resonate to this, you know, of sort of walking into a traditional restaurant of your cuisine and then being saturated with the spices, they enter every crevice of your being, your clothes and everything, right? And caught myself, as you're sharing this, I caught myself apologizing for, oh, I'm so sorry, like I smell like, spicy or whatever the word was, right? And so, yeah, it's a really interesting thing that you're bringing up and how I'm, you know, just noticing that that's still coming forward for me, right? Mm-hmm. From a place of kind of apologizing what shouldn't be apologized for. It's to us, it's celebration. Like it's food is community, it's gathering, it's sharing, it's storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the stage that is set for bringing people together. It's not just a meal.
Right.
And that too is part of identity, right?
100%. I mean, it's one of the things that it's almost like this is in conflict a little bit because it can be very comforting to go to places like the Agra Tandoori House and see your people and suddenly just be immersed in this like feeling of familiarity. By the way, just as an aside, there is a phenomenal Indian restaurant in Playa del Coco and Liberia, Costa Rica. If any of our listeners ever come here and you're looking for great Indian food, I can attest to this. I could not find Indian food this good in Toronto. Not that I've tried every single Indian place in Toronto or the surrounding.
Some other restaurant owners are saying that as you speak. You haven't tried mine.
You haven't tried mine. Exactly. Yeah. But just as an aside, this is a great, great place. And It's amazing because people here will ask me if I like it. And it's almost like I now have this, like, the status in the community of giving my stamp of approval.
You are the authority.
I'm the authority. Because I'm the only, you know, Indian heritage person around that I know of.
Yes.
Not to say that there aren't others. The owner of the restaurant is actually Indian from New Delhi.
Right.
So
right.
He's the other one that I know of. But yeah, and it's this feeling of conflict because you're totally right. Like, I used to feel when I lived in Austria and Switzerland, I used to feel embarrassed. My parents were diplomats, so they had to entertain and they would sometimes cook Indian dishes. And that creates, and you know, when you're cooking at scale because you're inviting like 50 people to your house, that's a lot of spices going off in that pressure cooker in there. So I used to feel apologetic with my friends if they came like shortly after and like the house hadn't been appropriately aired out.
Oh, for sure.
And find myself apologizing and say, you know, it's not like this all the time. And, you know, my parents aren't always just drinking tea. They're just being weird right now.
Yes. This is like, okay, so who can relate to this? This is on hair washing days. Mm-hmm. When I would make sure that I made the request to my mom, please do not commence the cooking extravaganza until I have like exited the home. Like, my hair has been freshly washed. And I need to maintain this herbal essence scent in my hair. So I totally get that for sure. And so that kind of like opens up to this sort of positioning of like assimilation and then acceptance. Mm-hmm. And so like, how does that kind of, I don't know, how does that show up and where do you start to kind of tease out what that has meant for you? And so for you, like, how do you feel like you felt like as if you were a fish out of water most of the time as you were kind of moving and hopping around as you were?
So that's an interesting question, Nishina, because, you know, I had sort of this interesting dichotomy where I didn't grow up in a very traditional Indian home. Like, we spoke English at home, even though I do know Hindi and understand it from, you know, just speaking to family. The language we spoke was English. We moved around a lot. My parents weren't very traditional in their expectations, but my father was a diplomat and he represented India in a lot of countries. He was the Indian ambassador to a lot of countries in Europe. So on the one hand, they were quite modern and quite progressive. But then on the other hand, they almost have to be like the ultimate Indians because they need to like show up.
Right.
They need to like represent the country abroad. And so it was this weird balancing act. And I remember I totally rejected my Indian heritage as a child and as a teenager in Switzerland. I just thought it was the most uncool thing to be associated with it. And my dad, he had a funny way of, you know, trying to get me to accept it more. He would say, we'd go out and people would say, where are you from? And he would say, oh, I'm Indian, but my daughter is Swiss. And we just feel like, oh my God, you're so embarrassing. And then, and people would take him seriously. And then they'd be like, oh, hey, you're Swiss. Well, you don't look Swiss. And
gosh.
So that's kind of, you know, so it's been a journey. But, you know, I think I've gotten to a place now where I'm just more comfortable. And I take the things that really mean a lot to me from my culture. And of course, like everything, there are also problems and there are things that I don't accept or agree with. But sort of part of this journey is understanding that part of myself more. And just, it felt like going out and blasting it, putting it on blast, at least starting to understand what it means to me.
Oh, that's beautiful. I mean, I'm hearing you say it and it sort of feels like that's kind of where the liberation piece might start to kind of reveal itself around who it is you get to be on your terms and by your choosing and by your introspection of like lived experience and reflecting back on that to inform and then decide like what works and what doesn't, what resonates, what doesn't, and not sort of really, you know, blame and shame and dismiss from like this rebellious place. Although that is also okay if that's part of the journey. It would make so much sense. I speak from experience in that in that department. And then just kind of holding those experiences as kind of like, this can be true for a variety of people. Like this attachment to this thing that no longer really makes sense for me might still be true for my folks, for my parents, for the aunties, for the uncles, for whomever. And I'm not really feeling in alignment with that anymore. And can that be okay? Can there be this honoring for that and self?
Right.
Like coexisting, happening at the same time.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. It might go both ways, right? For me, it's sort of the coming back to roots.
Right.
But for some people, it might be, okay, I'm at a point where I want to move away from it a little bit and explore something else. It's not, there's no one way to do it. There's no one right way to reclaim your identity or to kind of step into who you are at the present time. So that kind of segues into this other piece of identity, right? Which is our identity as women in this world. And I will fully acknowledge here that I'm speaking from a cishet woman's experience. And that's sort of the lens and positionality that I carry through the world, because that's sort of been my lived experience. But I mean, we carry a lot of labels as women. Right?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, there is a never-ending list, it feels like.
And we're at this point where, of course, there was always, there's the traditional ones, a daughter, wife, mother. But now there's dragon slayer, girl boss. Like, it's never ending, right?
Like Game of Thrones has entered the picture.
Moon witch, like whatever you want to be. And again, it's interesting because I don't know about you, but I'll give you a good example. The girl boss piece, right? I hear that term so often, and I feel like it is so loaded with expectations, both that go both ways as a career woman, as a woman who's having a career.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so curious, like for you, how does it resonate when you kind of hear that, or like you hold that title? Like what kind of bubble thoughts are popping out from your noggin?
Well, there's two parts to it. On the one hand, I mean, I own my own company. I run a successful business. I have employees. So on the one hand, I think, maybe yes, on sure, by some traditional metric, I would be a girl boss. On the other hand, I kind of want to cringe when I hear that term, and a little bit of, you know, kind of bile rises in my throat every time I hear it, because there are some really problematic associations that I have with it.
Right.
And not just with it, but also with sort of what it represents in the world, which at least in my understanding, I don't think is necessarily a liberation of women more than a participation of women upholding the same systems.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I can relate to that, you know, in being gifted with, I remember it so well, a gray sweatshirt with the word or the phrase, term, boss babe on the back in like white bolded font. And I remember, you know, it's interesting. It's one of those things where in the moment, there was just such a visceral reaction for me, which is kind of always the way I first respond. Like my brain will start to come into the conversation at a much later date. Usually
you're body first.
I am body first. I'm a neck down kind of girl. And so that's where my information comes forth. And it takes a while for me to understand and make sense of what my body's telling me. And I say that in hopes that maybe somebody else can be like, oh, that makes sense to me, right? And that's cool. It just takes a little bit longer, right? Or not. But I remember feeling very resistant, and we were meant to wear this for like multiple events and occasions and a photo shoot. And at the time, a pre-counseling profession, I just felt to myself, okay, I am none of these things that the sweatshirt represents. Like, I am not white. I'm not thin and lean and tall, not blonde. I just didn't embody what I perceived this term to mean and represent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it felt like such a betrayal and a misrepresentation to put it on my body.
Right.
And on the other side of it, it's like, well, just wear the damn sweatshirt and show up to the photo shoot. What's the issue, right? Like, you're just doing this thing. Yeah. And this is sort of, I guess, the assimilation piece of, like, you know, keeping the peace, not being dramatic, not making an issue mm-hmm. out of anything, just being a good, quiet girl and doing what's asked of you. And then every part of me is like, this is ridiculous. I don't get this. This doesn't make sense for me. I am not right. these things that all of you can kind of fill out the checklist for. And it just almost felt so much more isolating than the intention, which I think was to create some kind of inclusion,
mm-hmm.
which it did not for me.
Right.
It sort of created more separation.
Right. You know, I can totally relate to that, because I almost feel like there's this an unspoken understanding, it seems, out in the world, especially in the world of work, that women of color, brown women specifically, I'm only speaking to that experience, we're very good at again, not to paint everyone with the same brush, but yeah, there is this understanding that we're good at kind of keeping our head down and not mm-hmm. rocking the boat and doing what we're told. And it's kind of, in a way, it works, because sure, you know, you do well professionally to a point, and as time goes on, you kind of compromise bits and bits and bits and bits and pieces of yourself. And so you get to a point where, yeah, you might be doing amazingly professionally, but are you really, like, fully, you know, stepping into your power, in quotes, so to speak? But then on the other hand, I don't know if, you know, maybe this is something the listeners can sort of think on or reflect on and tell us, you guys, what you think. If there's this tendency to sort of just accept these terms and run with it, because when I look at sort of girl bosses in the media, what I see are a lot of white women that are being praised for now kind of becoming, you know, CEOs and starting companies and all of, you know, all the whole spiel. And then all these truths come out about how they're treating their employees and sure. how they're, you know, they're firing women for getting pregnant or not giving maternity leave. But then their products are all about female empowerment. And it's like, you can't just slap a quote on a rose gold mug and mm-hmm. call it liberation while you kind of stomp on people in your own company in your stilettos, right? It doesn't matter who's oppressing you, whether they're doing it in a suit or they're doing it in a pair of Jimmy Choo's. And so I understand this feeling of almost like internal confusion, because on the other hand, I feel like in our culture, we are so encouraged to pursue careers and to, you know, do well on, you know, on a certain level, right? Like, more and more brown women are coming forth in positions of power. And that's so great to see. So I wonder how we can kind of, you know, climb the ladder, but also open the door for those who come after us and not embody so many of those, quote, girl boss type of qualities.
Oh, that is the question. That is the question to which I do not have an answer, other than, you know, I'm just wondering, kind of with the reference of the ladder, which is the way in which we've often just been in relationship to seems an achievement mm-hmm. and success, and just the idea that's been positioned by so many folks out there that's sort of speaking on the things that we are speaking on too. And that, what if, like, there just wasn't a ladder? What if the ladder right. just, you know, kind of got broken down and removed, and we're just all working from ground level together?
Mm-hmm. To your point, Nishina, about there not being a ladder, I think one of the challenges that we all have with that is the ladder sort of gives you a sense of where you are, right? Mm-hmm. So it is a sort of a place for you to anchor your identity. Mm-hmm. And I think we know this. I think we know this intellectually, like, why are we comparing ourselves to other people? Why are we looking to see where everyone else is on the ladder? But on the other hand, human beings, we are relational people. We do understand how we're doing in the world compared to other people, right? So while I agree with you about the ladder, what's the hand that we play in these identities, and why do we anchor ourselves to them so passionately?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to answer that from a lens of like thinking broadly and how we might hold that. And I don't know for everyone. I know for me and maybe the collection of folks that I'm in relationship with therapeutically, and then just, you know, through conversations with like friendships and people, connections like you and I have, there seems to be a running theme around, you're right. I think there's nothing wrong with having a barometer and metrics and parameters to help us figure out like where the edge is, where we're feeling like we're moving further away from ourselves. And then when we can kind of get a sense that we're kind of reconnecting back to us, to a sense of self or true self or core self, however you want to name it. So I do believe that it's important to have these barometers in place. And at the same time, I guess there's an invitation to get, like you said earlier in the episode, around getting a bit more deeply connected to the curiosity around where this all birthed in the first place, and identifying maybe if, for example, you know, I'm a big believer for myself in my own work and my own discovery, and this might be helpful for listeners. I find that getting intimately connected to my own value system, which changes, by the way, there are some values that I think have stayed firm and true for me for the long haul. And then there are others that sort of shift, like you mentioned, you know, my value system as a mom, as a partner, as a business owner, they'll shift and change and morph and mean different things to me. But can I get clear about that? Can I investigate that and sort of dive in to understand what that means for me? And right. So I think that there's this invitation to recognize, yes, of course, you want to have a sense of what that feels like in terms of looking up and looking around and getting an indication of like, how are other people doing this? What works? Mm-hmm. What doesn't? Like, can you share? Can we connect? Can we talk and learn from one another? And then using that to come back to self, not right. as your then, you know, four steps to figure it out for yourself based right. on what you've heard from the other person, right?
Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that answers your question. Was that?
No, I think it does, because it's interesting because I also think that one of the things about sort of these identities and labels that we cling to, right? The ones that we seek, we're almost clinging to qualities that we think are associated with them, right?
Right. Yes.
For women, especially, there has been historically, or well, continues to be, not what am I saying, historically continues to be
yes.
qualities around, quote, motherhood. There's qualities around daughterhood. There's qualities around being a wife that sort of society expects of you. And so there can be comfort in those labels. Because, you know, if I'm seen as a wife, for example, I'm seen as desirable in society because I got snatched up by a man.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, mm-hmm. I'm seen as maybe perhaps giving, as service oriented in favor right. of someone else. And so I think that maybe it's not just about sort of what these labels, it's like you said, it's the values and it's also the qualities that we associate. And so when we're looking in relation to other people, we're really just comparing sort of the qualities that we think that they embody, right? Mm-hmm. And the ones that we want to have in ourselves. And it's tough because I almost feel like we need a new definition, a new dictionary for identity, right? Because if you are an artist or you're a creator, you're a podcaster, you're a dog owner, like there are so many ways to identify that we don't really know what words to use, how to describe ourselves to other people. And so like, what are the qualities that we associate with those necessarily, just because they just haven't been part of the zeitgeist. They just haven't been part of the conversation so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I love what you're saying. It's so, so true. And I think how it's kind of landing for me, and maybe, I don't know if listeners can relate, it's sort of like the conditioning in presenting ourselves from the place of like, what do you do? Like who you are stems from what you do.
Exactly.
Right. And so then maybe if the question of like who you are is stemming from a broader, more expansive place, mm-hmm. that might be presented differently. And there might just be more room for different parts of you to show up in that. And you're like, oh, like this part of me is kind of cool. I didn't recognize that this was part of the identity. It doesn't feel so boxed all of a sudden.
Right. And so I think that, you know, for our listeners, one of the, you know, if you're wondering how can you start reclaiming identity, it's almost like you kind of have to put yourself in a place of discomfort and challenge yourself to think beyond some of the sort of narrow definitions that we all understand. And I almost think you need to allow yourself to fail a little, right? Hmm. Like you need to allow yourself to be maybe not the perfect mother or not the perfect wife, so that you're not so anchored. If that identity isn't serving you, mm-hmm. not to say that you stop being a mother, but you don't have to, you can allow yourself to fail a little bit here and there, so that you don't mm-hmm. feel so anchored to the perfection that is associated with motherhood, with wifehood. What's the word wifehood. For that?
Yeah.
Wifery?
Mm-hmm.
Wifehood. Wife or
one of those.
Yeah. One of those. Yeah. And I think that's, I don't know, for me, that's part of it a little bit, right? Because there's no perfect way to be someone. There's no perfect way to embody anything.
Mm-hmm. So true. Yeah. I think about, well, you know, by no means am I recommending, suggesting, insinuating anyone should seek out this avenue to figure out self by means of, you know, having childs or going out and birthing a baby. But for me, I think that, you know, there's a beauty in that happening at an early time of my life, because mm-hmm. it really did help, unbeknownst to me, sort of support that journey to figure out. Like, I really didn't have a solid preconceived understanding or notion at 21 what that was supposed to look like. Of course, just from my own journey with being mothered by my mother,
right.
I carried that into it. But I was still very in a space of like egocentric, self-absorbed living, right?
You were 21.
I was 21, rightfully so.
I think you get a bit of a free pass.
I was like in the club stage still, right? It was a weird time for me. But I'm relating to what you're saying so much, because I guess what my point is that there's an element of like, ignorance being bliss that can be invited to this to help kind of that idea of reimagining and recreating and redefining and stripping away and stripping down from the framework that was sort of set up for you or with you in certain environments, and just kind of like, what if I didn't know any of it? What if I had no idea? What would it then look like? What would it feel like?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, right? And of course, some things you can be more experimental with than others, right? Don't experiment with having a baby to see, you know,
Please
what motherhood
don't.
Means to you.
No, do not.
Have a baby
no
if need you to. Want and you're Absolutely. Ready for it, but don't do it as an experiment. But I think you're right, right? Like it does take a little bit of experimentation. It does obviously take a little bit of bravery, especially if you're doing something that's more out of the box or out of, well, what is the box anyway? But, you know,
the box.
Yes. The box mm-hmm. that, you know, society decided. But I think that that's sometimes life just throws those things at you. Suddenly you need to figure out how to be a mom, right? Suddenly you need to figure out how to be a business owner, because no one teaches you how to do these things. And so suddenly you need to figure out how to be, you know, more connected with your roots, right? Like no one can guide you in that journey. No one can, it's going to look different for everyone. And so I think that sort of to wrap this up and to kind of, if there's a learning that our conversation today has kind of birthed for me, it's that when you are in those moments of suddenly life sort of thrown something your way and now you need to figure it out, like what happened to you at 21, where you suddenly had a baby, you had 9 months to, you know, process. And then you kind of had to get to the practical stuff of like changing diapers and making sure this kid stayed alive 24/7, because then you don't have time to reflect and go inwards, I would assume.
You would assume correctly, yes. Right.
And so just, I think when life throws these opportunities at you, there's a natural resistance. And so instead of seeing this as, oh my God, now this great change is coming and I have to like figure this out, just take a moment to pause and think, you know, is there an opportunity here? Is there an opportunity for me to be somebody or to bring something into my life that might make me a little happier or resonate with where I am right now? That's how I think of it.
That's so beautiful. I can't top that. That's really beautiful. And I share that, Apoorva. Ditto. Yeah, I love that phrase, is there an opportunity here? I think if that was kind of held on a day-to-day, more intentionally, more consciously, it'd be very informative. So I really think that that's a beautiful inquiry to leave listeners with. Write that down somewhere on a sticky, listeners. Put that somewhere.
I have to write that down because I have all this wisdom right now, and come tomorrow morning, I'm going to be screaming into my pillow.
Well, friendship is for reminding each other. So when you forget, I will remind you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
On that lovely note, Nishina, what can I celebrate with you in this moment?
What's coming for me is a celebration of like starting where it's small, began at the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. This need not be hard and terrifying and challenging from the get-go. And so if you can begin in a space, in a place where it feels easy, then do it. Let yourself do that.
I love that.
And what about you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So many things to celebrate. I think the thing that sort of is coming up for me is just kind of let go of what it's supposed to look like, right? Kind of let go of how this should look and just kind of go with the flow and embrace how you feel. And some days it feels good and some days my hair smells like the Lavortica house.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Right? But to your point, baby steps.
Baby steps are steps nonetheless, right?
Totally, Nishina. I loved having this conversation with you. And for our listeners, I think our question to you is, do you feel boxed in by labels? And if so, what are those labels that box you in? What are some of the pieces of your identity that you think are fluid, that are in motion, and that are shifting? We'd love to hear from you.
Until next time, Apoorva.
Until next time, Nishina. That's our show, folks. Thanks for listening. A big shout out to our producer, editor, and my husband who keeps me well supplied with coffee, Ryan Miller. To learn more about Nishina's work, visit harborcw.com or slide into her DMs on Instagram at Nishina_HCW. For more great conversations, visit womeninourtown.com or give us a follow on Instagram at womeninourtown.